Coming up on Harvard Chan This Week in Health, tracking Zika in the U.S. and abroad. As officials issue an historic travel warning in Florida, we'll get an update on the situation in Brazil as the Summer Olympics get underway. Plus, the health concerns in Brazil that extend beyond Zika, why Rio 2016 is shining a light on the conditions millions face in that city's slums. Hello and welcome to Harvard Chan This Week in Health. It's Friday, August 5th, and I'm Noah Levitt.
And I'm Amy Montemiro. We'll get to the Summer Olympics in Brazil in a few moments, but first we want to discuss the latest on the Zika outbreak in a small community in Florida.
The CDC is now warning pregnant women and their partners not to travel to Wynwood, which is just north of Miami, where more than a dozen people have been infected with Zika through mosquito bites. It's the first time the CDC has issued a travel warning in the U.S. over infectious disease concerns.
In response, Florida officials will begin an aerial insecticide spraying campaign to kill Aedes aegypti, the mosquito that transmits Zika. In addition, the CDC is recommending that people living around Wynwood take precautions such as applying insect repellent, wearing long-sleeve shirts and long pants, and removing the standing water that can be a breeding ground for mosquitoes.
And the epicenter of the Zika epidemic has, of course, been Brazil, where the virus has been linked to 1,700 cases of the birth defect known as microcephaly. This week, Brazil's Zika response is in the global spotlight as the 2016 Rio Summer Olympics get underway. To get an update on the situation, we spoke via Skype with Marcia Castro, an assistant professor of demography in the Department of Global Health and Population at the Harvard Chan School. Castro is currently doing research in Brazil, and she says that at the moment, the Zika threat there is actually quite low.
The number of cases declined by 87% until May, so now it's even more. But this was expected because there is a clear pattern of transmission. We knew that with dengue before, it's the same vector. So in the colder and drier months, which is usually June, July, August, transmission becomes very, very low because you have fewer vectors. So the density of the vector is much smaller. And that's why when all this discussion about the fear of Zika in the Olympics, there was absolutely no epidemiological evidence that this was going to happen unless the vector would completely change behavior and become very abundant in those months, which is not the case. I was in Rio early July and then last weekend, and I haven't seen any mosquito at all. I'll be there next week. I'll watch a few events of the Olympics. I have my bottle of repellent, but I don't think I'm going to need to use it at all.
In the weeks and months leading up to the games, many athletes dropped out, citing concerns over Zika virus. But Castro says the risk for athletes and even fans coming to the games is low. Instead, she says the greatest risk may be from stomach illnesses due to polluted water in Guanabara Bay, where many events will be held.
And even if there are cases of Zika, Castro says Brazil has a well-designed infrastructure to track infectious disease outbreaks. The system dates back to the 2014 World Cup, which was hosted by Brazil.
There was a fear of dengue during the World Cup. So they developed a very nice app to report fever-like diseases. So it's not just for Zika, but it could be for any fevers, because that would be a proxy for the diseases. They hired, I think it was 2,500 additional physicians that they're going to have in different health units. They have health centers in every single venue where they're going to have the games.
Even if the current threat of Zika is low, Castro says Brazil is likely to see an uptick in cases in the future because epidemics often come in waves.
She says that fighting Zika comes down to two key areas: controlling the vector that carries the virus, in this case, mosquitoes, but also improving infrastructure to reduce breeding opportunities for those mosquitoes.
It's larviciding, it's spraying, it's destroying larval habitats. And Brazil is now having some tests with the Oxitec mosquito, the genetic modified mosquito. There is one city in São Paulo, in the interior of São Paulo, that is showing some promising results, but it's just the first few months. The problem now is, and this is not just for Brazil, it's for any country fighting the mosquito, is that the cities grew up too fast and too disorganized. And then you have a large fraction of the population that don't have access to piped water, which means they have to stock water at home. And in many, many cases, this water is not covered and it becomes an ideal breeding habitat for the mosquito. There is no regular waste collection in some areas, which means you have all this waste accumulated on the ground. And for this particular mosquito, all that you need is a Coca-Cola lid and it's gonna lay the eggs there. So it does, I personally think that no matter how intensive and good quality all the vector control interventions are, if you don't take care of the infrastructure that is lacking, particularly the water and the waste, it's not gonna be successful.
I think the whole Zika problem really made it very clear that the government had to address infrastructure. So in several places in the Northeast, the government has released funds to start a massive infrastructure construction. That takes time. In Rio, it's a different story because they had to rebuild or build from zero lots of things. And then in those areas, they do have infrastructure. In all the venues that you're going to have any competition, the vector control teams, they do sweeps every single day. Although you don't even see mosquitoes in the city, they are sweeping every single day checking for habitats. But that's during the games. I mean, that's a discussion going on now in Brazil. What's going to be the legacy of the games and what's the plan post-Olympics?
Moving forward, Castro says the game plan for combating Zika remains the same as it has been in recent months, because there is still no medication to treat the infection and still no vaccine.
At the government level, it's a combination of introducing the vector control and taking care of those areas that lack infrastructure. On a personal basis, it's the use of repellents. And if you are in an area with active transmission and the mosquito is there, it's, you know, trying to not use flip-flops, although it's hot, but, you know, because the mosquitoes like the extremities and they bite during the day. So it's a little bit of, there is a little bit of personal protection that people could try to do in order to prevent a mosquito bite. For people that travel, I think the main problem is the fact that Zika can be transmitted to sexual contact. And one thing we don't know yet is for how long the virus can stay active in your body. And the recommendation from CDC is that people that travel to those areas should not have unprotected sex for 6 months. Maybe 6 months is too much, but we have no idea how long it lasts. So it's kind of unlikely that people will respect those 6 months. You know, human beings, human behavior, it's highly complicated, but that's one recommendation that people should try to follow, because I think the longest record we have is the presence of the virus, I think 73 days after an infection, but we have no idea what's the maximum number of days. So personal protection matter, but if people don't perceive the risk, they won't do anything.
Again, that was Marcia Castro speaking with us via Skype from Brazil, where she's currently conducting research. And she is planning to attend some events at the Rio Olympics, so we'll be touching base with her again throughout the games to get an update on the situation in Brazil.
And Noah, we heard Castro speaking about infrastructure concerns in Brazil, specifically Rio de Janeiro, a city of 12 million people. And there are issues we're likely to hear more about as the International Olympic Committee looks to expand the reach of the Games into new countries.
And one of the major concerns in Rio is the slums. It's estimated that 1/4 of people in that city live in the slums, which are unplanned, poorly built settlements that often lack basic infrastructure. And around the world, it's estimated that 1 billion people live in such conditions. In a recent article from the journal Lancet Respiratory Medicine, Joe Allen, an assistant professor of exposure assessment science at the Harvard Chan School, says these slums represent a, quote, constant assault on health.
They don't have the basic infrastructure, and it creates conditions with raw sewage, lack of clean water, lack of access to healthy food, lack of safety and security. And these are all contributing to disparities in disease burden we see for this population, but also globally. There's 1 billion people in the world who live in these unplanned urban settlements. The WHO released a report recently on the global burden of disease And the environment was found to contribute to 25% of diseases globally. One of the big drivers of this is poor indoor air quality related to using cook stoves or biomass fuels in slums.
And as Marcia Castro mentioned earlier, the Brazilian government did invest in infrastructure and improvements around Rio leading up to the Games. But while there is growing awareness of the conditions in slums in Rio and around the world, Joe Allen says there's little evidence that the world has done an effective job in responding to and improving living conditions.
And this is yet another reason why research being done to address social and health disparities is so important.
And as I mentioned earlier, I think as the International Olympic Committee kind of looks to expand where the Games are held, I think we'll start seeing more of these issues pop up. So while a lot of the focus now is on Rio, I think a lot of what we're talking about is not limited to Rio, so we'll probably see it covered in other countries as well.
That's all for Harvard Chan This Week in Health. I'm Amy Montemuro.
And I'm Noah Levitt. And a reminder that you can always listen to this podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Stitcher.